We call on all countries around the world to join us by cutting off all trade and financial ties with North Korea.
New economic sanctions imposed on North Korea. It's Friday, September 22nd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us too on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, difficulties faced in reporting from Myanmar. Cambodia targets U.S. interests. Leadership criticism mounting in China. Evolving car technology. Guarding your least favorite person. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump has imposed new economic sanctions against North Korea for its nuclear threat, targeting individuals and businesses that finance trade with Pyongyang's reclusive communist regime and funding for its weapons development. The U.S. leader called North Korea's nuclear bomb and ballistic missile programs a grave threat to peace and security in our world, and it is unacceptable that others financially support this criminal rogue regime. Trump made the announcement alongside South Korean President Moon Jae-in and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, both of whom praised the U.S. action as they met in New York on the sidelines of the annual United Nations General Assembly. The president said the new U.S. sanctions give the U.S. Treasury Department authority to target any individual or entity that conducts significant trade in goods, services, or technology with North Korea. A short time later, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin elaborated.
No bank in any country should be used to facilitate Kim Jong-un's destructive behavior. This new executive order will authorize Treasury to impose a range of sanctions, such as suspending U.S. correspondent account access to any foreign bank that knowingly conducts or facilitates significant transactions tied to trade with North Korea.
The Treasury Secretary said the new financial sanctions would be applied to behavior after Thursday, when President Trump signed an executive order allowing the Treasury Department to enforce them, which includes specific areas of commerce.
Foreign financial institutions are now on notice that going forward, they can choose to do business with the United States or with North Korea, but not both. This new executive order enables Treasury to freeze assets of anyone conducting significant trade in goods, services, or technology with North Korea. It also allows us to freeze assets of actors supporting North Korea's textile, fishing, IT, and manufacturing industries. We call on all countries around the world to join us by cutting off all trade and financial ties with North Korea in order to achieve a denuclearized Korean peninsula.
Despite tensions over North Korea's nuclear and missile threats, South Korea confirmed Thursday a plan to send $8 million in aid to the North. The Unification Ministry said its aid policy remains unaffected by tensions. China has called for dialogue, but Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe told the UN General Assembly pressure, not talks, is what is needed. Mr. Abe said the North is working to attain hydrogen bombs and intercontinental ballistic missiles despite decades of talks. North Korea, he added, must be made to give up all nuclear and ballistic missile programs in a complete, verifiable, and irreversible manner. Grant Newsham, a senior research fellow at the Tokyo-based Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that Mr. Abe believes it is in Japan's interest to stay as close to the Americans as possible.
Mr. Abe does believe in his own right that it is Japan's interest to take a firm, almost uncompromising, for now, approach towards North Korea. While he is trying to stay close to the Americans, he also realizes that, and personally believes, that it's in his interest, it's in Japan's interest, to take this approach. And one should never underestimate the effect that the kidnapping, the abductions of Japanese citizens has had on Prime Minister Abe and on a lot of Japanese as well. It really does resonate, and I'm not with a lot of people, and I'm not sure that particularly the American side has ever quite understood that.
In speaking with an Asian analyst yesterday, my sense was that Asians on the street were appalled by President Trump's bellicose remarks that would maybe force North Korea to dig in deeper than it is now.
Well, I think there's a lot of Asians, and I think you could probably find plenty who do think that. But on the other hand, there's probably a lot that really don't care either way. But there's also the quiet undercurrent of a lot of people throughout Asia, through north to south to West Asia who do think that this is not what Mr. Trump said. The approach he took is not a bad one. They're not likely to say it out loud. But I think there is a appreciation that it's a good thing that the Americans are standing up to adversaries in Asia. So Asia's a big place, so you can find, of course, people who will hold positions at both ends of the spectrum.
Mr. Abe in his remarks said it is indisputably a matter of great urgency. Aside from South Korea, Japan really has a lot at stake in this crisis.
It really does, and it's also worth pointing out that Japan is basically defenseless against whatever North Korea might do, largely a missile threat and someday a nuclear threat. But yes, it has Patriot anti-missile systems and Aegis shipborne anti-missile systems, but really by itself, Japan is in a fix. And that's just dealing with North Korea. And China is an even bigger problem for Japan. So this really is a problem that Japan can no longer avoid as much as it might like to, and Mr. Abe does recognize this. And I think the public at large is coming around to understanding that Japan is not immune from the risks and the dangers that one finds in the Asia region. So this is a sea change of sorts that has taken place. Oddly enough, I think in the Japanese political world, there are still a lot of politicians who have not realize that Japan is in danger and that it does need to do much more in its own defense. And that also includes staying as close to the Americans as possible.
Grant Newsham said for now it appears to be Japan's position that 25 years of talking with North Korea has achieved very little. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Pakistan wants zero political or military role for India in Afghanistan. Thousands protest Duterte and martial law in Philippines. Standard & Poor's cuts China credit rating, citing debt. South Korea to send humanitarian aid to North, keeping diplomatic channels open. Fake news remains a problem in Indonesia. Expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. And when you have the opportunity, stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. More than 300,000 ethnic Rohingya have been driven out of western Myanmar as evidence mounts of ethnic cleansing, a charge Myanmar has denied. Steve Sanford reports from Rakhine State in western Myanmar, where limited access and false reports emerging from the area, the press is now struggling to get an accurate account of the growing crisis.
As global condemnation intensifies with accusations of ethnic cleansing by the Myanmar army, authorities continue to blame Muslim terrorists for the destruction and displacement. In an act of transparency, the government granted access to a group of journalists to visit Hindu villagers who claimed they were attacked by Muslim terrorists. But a check revealed that two of the victims had also posed as so-called Bengali terrorists in photos distributed on social media. For human rights activists investigating the crisis, like Phil Robertson, it has damaged the government's credibility.
You know, on one hand, they bring out these fake photos or these fake narratives, and then they attack the human rights groups like us, saying, why don't you guys investigate? Why aren't you even-handed? We're like, fine, bring it on. We want to go to those areas. We want to see what you're saying. Let us in. Let us go where we want to go and do what we want to find the truth.
Myanmar had been ruled by a military dictatorship for more than 50 years before reforms began, and the local press is accustomed to media censorship. But the added tension of what many see as a religious-based conflict makes information gathering even more difficult in a Buddhist-dominated country.
If you're trying to get voices from the community, Muslim communities, you are being, you know, seen differently by the Arakan extremists, and you could be threatened. And also, if you want to interview Rakhines, and some people want to say what happened to it from their heart, but they are being watched by their neighbors, by the police or police spy, and then they dare not to say anything.
For decades, the former junta has pushed nationalism as a driving force to oppose ethnic minorities fighting for semi-autonomy. In Rakhine State, it's a viewpoint shared by many in the monkhood, who are held in high regard by the public.
It is an operation of the Bengalis.
As the numbers of displaced people rise, both in Myanmar and Bangladesh, many are wondering if the truth will ever get out. Steve Sanford reporting for VOA from Mung Dao, Myanmar.
Happening now in Asia, a large mob tried to block a shipment of humanitarian aid to besieged Muslims in western Myanmar before they were chased off by police. The government's information office says about 300 protesters gathered at a dock where a boat was preparing to transport 50 tons of supplies. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you've taken part of your day to spend it with us on VOA Asia. Following the closing of independent media outlets and the arrest of Cambodia's opposition leader, officials in Phnom Penh have begun training their verbal fire on the United States, adding to mounting anxiety in the Cambodian capital among government critics and media workers. On Friday, senior Cambodian military officials pledged the elimination of all foreigners deemed intent to commit aggression against the country, according to statements reported by government mouthpiece Fresh News. The comments were posted on the same day that Prime Minister Hun Sen declared two American spies plotting to overthrow his government had been identified and ordered the investigation of all U.S. citizens suspected of conducting espionage. In the same speech, he also suggested the U.S. Peace Corps should pull out of Cambodia, and the week before he suspended a program to identify and repatriate the remains of U.S. soldiers lost during the Vietnam War. Phil Robertson, Deputy Asia Director of Human Rights Watch, says the definition of what constituted an act against the government is being interpreted increasingly broadly under vague Cambodian espionage laws.
There's a disturbing new trend going on in Cambodia. And this really started with the Ricketson case, where you had a person from Australia who was charged with espionage, despite the fact that they had done no research that we can see that involved anything but open sources.
In June, Australian filmmaker James Ricketson was charged with espionage under a provision in the Cambodian Criminal Code that criminalizes receiving or collecting various types of information, objects, and technology that may undermine national defense with a view to delivering power to a foreign state or its agents. Details about the precise accusation against Ricketson, a vocal critic of the Cambodian government, have not been offered, although it's known he faces up to 10 years in prison. Robertson says he believes Cambodians with foreign passports would soon be targeted in a similar way.
There's a new plan to try to intimidate, to threaten, and to try to control foreigners in a much more systematic way.
In the past month, the Cambodian daily newspaper, which is owned by Americans, has been shuttered over a disputed tax bill. The U.S.-funded Radio Free Asia has closed its in-country operations, citing threats, and the National Democratic Institute has been kicked out of the country. We thank David Boyle and Su Narin in Phnom Penh for sending us this story. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Pakistan says Indian shelling across the disputed Kashmir frontier has killed at least four civilians, including two women. The deadly incident took place in a remote village. Pakistani forces responded, targeting Indian posts from where fire on the civilian population originated. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, analysts say China's foreign policy achievements are likely to be a key focus next month when the Communist Party holds a crucial once-in-five-year leadership meeting. But don't expect China's leaders to say much about the challenges and setbacks they've faced since Xi Jinping came to power, even though a growing number of some scholars here are doing just that. Xi Jinping has visited nearly 30 countries, five continents, and championed what some in China call great power diplomacy. He has also been advocating what he calls the China solution, Beijing's proposals and answers to the world's toughest problems. State media recently released a six-part series ahead of the 19th Party Congress on great power diplomacy. Advocates argue that, as a rising power, China should do what it feels is right anytime and whenever it wishes. However, some analysts like Sheng Dingli, a political science professor at Shanghai's Fudan University, say the approach has led to a series of setbacks over the past 5 years, from China's unilateral declaration of an air defense identification zone in the East China Sea to troubles with North and South Korea and more.
China failed in all South China Sea, East China Sea, China-Indian border dispute. It's a relationship with South Korea, with North Korea. In one word, China's partnership, its neighboring foreign policy, is not welcomed by any of its neighbors.
Jean-Pierre Capistan, a political science professor at Hong Kong Baptist University, said criticisms are growing and more notable than they were under Xi's predecessor, Hu Jintao. Part of the reason, he says, has been the antagonizing approach Xi has taken toward quite a few countries and neighbors in asserting China's power in the region, be it Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, India, or others.
Apart from the Philippines, which is now having a better relationship with China, I don't know which countries which are very dependent on China, like Cambodia or Laos. The rest of the region is more and more worried about China's empowerment.
Kabistan said while the party is, while countries rather are included in that close with China, such as Singapore and Indonesia, they're also trying to defend their maritime rights.
The other thing is some of the projects developed by Xi Jinping, like the BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative, have been so ambitious and so political. There's been a lack of economic rationale behind that, and a lot of money has been invested in this initiative without knowing exactly whether it's going to be profitable.
He said while the party is not likely to offer any foreign policy criticisms in the Congress report, one key thing to watch will be if it does offer some self-defense of Xi's initiatives and setbacks. Our thanks go to Joyce Huang and Brian Kupczynski in Beijing for contributing this report, filed by VOA correspondent Bill Ide. This news alert from VOA Asia: U.S. President Donald Trump imposed new economic sanctions against North Korea for its nuclear threat, targeting individuals and businesses that finance trade with Pyongyang's reclusive communist regime and funding for its weapons development. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, ever so slowly, the world is edging toward the demise of gasoline-powered engines. It won't likely come for decades, but it's coming. VOA's Kevin Enix reports two new entries in the alternative-powered vehicle department are showing off ways that technology is slowly changing the automobile marketplace.
Researchers at Cairo's Helwan University wanted to create a vehicle to help disabled students move around campus.
So we started to look at what's available on the market and what the country is doing for them, and we found that there are electric wheelchairs or manual wheelchairs. But these chairs don't allow people to go long distances. You cannot use them to go from Mazar al-Gadida to Nasr City or from Nasr City to Mahdi. They cannot cross long distances.
This remote-controlled, solar-powered car solves that problem.
So we decided to make them a three-wheeled car. They can go long distances with it. They would not need anybody to help them drive it or to stop it. And if they need to stop it, there is an emergency system that they can work manually. Its speed reaches 55 kilometers per hour. This is a very good speed in Egypt especially.
The Egyptian team is now raising funds to start mass producing their people mover. Meanwhile, get ready for the Arcimoto, coming from the U.S. state of Oregon. It's a three-wheeled electric vehicle designed to be a commuter car.
I thought, you know, if we could build something that was much closer to the motorcycle in terms of efficiency and fun factor and, you know, footprint on the road, but was close to the car in terms of capabilities and enclosable and carries groceries and stable, that we'd have a real product opportunity.
It's called the SRK, and it'll be available in the next few months. But it's taken 10 years and a few prototypes to get it right.
By switching to handlebar steering, we were able to move the passengers into a more upright seating position, like you would have on a city scooter. And that let us shorten the vehicle by almost 2 feet and drop hundreds of pounds, almost 600 pounds of weight between generation six or generation seven and generation eight.
Losing all that weight kept the price down to a relatively inexpensive $12,000. It also gives the SRK a top speed of 136 kilometers per hour, and its range of 112 kilometers is more than enough to get most people to work or the store. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
As the weekend approaches, it might be time to hit the movie theater. There's a new film starring Oscar nominees Samuel L. Jackson, Salma Hayek, and Gary Oldman, The Hitman's Bodyguard, which is out here in U.S. theaters. As VOA Asia's David Byrd reports, the fast-paced action comedy has Golden Globe nominee Ryan Reynolds hired to protect Jackson, who also happens to be his worst enemy.
I'm a AAA-rated executive protection agent. And you're the most wanted hitman in the world. My job is to keep you out of harm's way.
Ryan Reynolds plays Michael Bryce, a former special agent turned bodyguard who is charged with guarding Samuel L. Jackson's character, Darius Kincaid, a notorious hitman. Kincaid is set to testify at the International Criminal Court against Gary Oldman's character, Vladislav Dukovic, a genocidal warlord on trial in The Hague. Bryce has to get Kincaid from London to the Netherlands without both of them getting killed. The film features several action comedy standards like car chases, fights in narrow hallways, things blowing up, and gunfights. It also features machine gun-like and often profane banter between the co-stars. Samuel L. Jackson says that he had no problems adding the colorful language to the script.
I just like the fact that it was a movie. Yeah, there's a lot of action, but there are a lot of words. And the words are, you know, important, and the words are poignant, and the words are funny.
Mexican-born Oscar nominee Salma Hayek plays Sonia Kincaid, who is behind bars and is featured in only a couple of scenes. But Jackson's character is willing to risk his life in order to rescue her. Sonia also shows a gift for the profane invective, and Hayek says that she loved playing a character with no filter.
Oh, it was so liberating to have that permission to have no censorship or boundaries. She just does and says whatever she wants and thinks, and she's afraid of nothing, and she lets you know where you're standing, for sure, you know, and she's witty, and I did feel a great sense of freedom.
Reynolds' character used to be a superstar agent, but has been down on his luck until he gets the assignment to protect Kincaid. The 40-year-old Canadian says that he learned a little bit about law enforcement from his older brothers, one of whom is a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
He's into that world. He loves coming to set, loves coming watching the stuff, but I'm as into his world as he's into mine, so I love going with him to his precinct and checking it out and seeing what he's doing day to day.
Samuel L. Jackson says he hopes that audiences catch on to the good time the actors were having making this film.
Part of a movie being fun for an audience to watch is the people on screen were actually having fun. Sometimes it doesn't work, but in this case, you know, we were having a good time laughing.
The Hitman's Bodyguard is rated R for strong language and violence throughout. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and we know you have many different ways that you can catch our program, a lot of them digital, as you can download us as a podcast or stream us online. One of our favorite methods has always been listening on the radio. If you happen to be in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, catch us on Helps Radio at Help University. Also say hello to the Faculty of Communication who run the radio station if you're there. We'd like to hear from you. You can write to us via Facebook, VOA Asia, or email voaasia@voanews.com. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Dan Crafton, Ira Melman, David Bird, Ali Ogden on our team, along with managing editor Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson. Have a great day.